the Sunday panel, and one or two things to talk about with Linda Clark, law partner with Dentons Kensington Swan, and Richard Harmon from the Politic website online. Morena to you both. Linda, hello.
Morena.
Richard.
Morena.
Good morning. So just quickly on the Research New Zealand polling, which I notice is getting a bit of activity on the texts. Linda, euthanasia, I'm not seeking your opinion on it, but we know a lot of medical professionals are opposed to the end-of-life choice bill and others are in favour. An accusation, which I notice is being reflected in the texts, is that people are not well enough informed about what euthanasia will mean. They think the Act will make it legal to turn off life support, which is already legal, and so on. Are you happy that Kiwis know what they're voting on?
I think there's plenty of opportunity to get informed if you feel that you're not informed. And there's a referendum website, which I recommend, and it's www.referendums.govt.nz. That answers all of your questions. But this isn't its first rodeo, and I think that's important. Yes, COVID's got in the way. Yes, I imagine if there hadn't been for COVID, we'd have a big advertising campaign or information campaign at the moment. But, you know, this is an idea that's been through Parliament twice before with votes in the House, first from Michael Law's bill in 1995 and then the second time from Peter Brown in 2003, and both times didn't get through. Then in 2012, Marion Street brought a bill which has morphed into what we've got today. Each time there's been a significant amount of public debate, and I think there is a lot of debate, and I'm interested in the polling that you were just talking about. I mean, polls too have been done on this since, when I looked at this the other day, since 2003, and in those significant windows of 2003, 2008, 2015, the polls all showed that New Zealand, by a very wide majority, support this. So I expect it will pass. But yeah, if you're listening and you think you don't know the ins and outs of this, then go to the website because that will explain it to you in a really easy form.
Very good. Your line's not very good, so we might actually call you back, see if we can improve that, and I'll have an, if you'll forgive me, I'll have an at it to Richard for a while. Richard, the cannabis vote will be close, it seems. Is there a wider issue with cannabis than just tidying up its availability and not making nice people criminals? Irrespective of how you'll vote, again, what do you think people are worried about? Cannabis creep and a larger lotus-eating sort of danger for New Zealand? Is that why it's close? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right, Jim. And I think what both of these referendums point up is the difficulty with referendums in that they require a yes-no vote. Now, there are a huge number of different questions being answered by the cannabis referendum. Number one is the allegation that we're criminalising a large section of the population, particularly Māori, and there's obviously truth in that. On the other side of the coin is, as you've said, cannabis creep. I think there's a real concern that's growing that cannabis is somehow related in some communities to the consumption of pee. And all of those things are things that really require, I think, probably a Royal Commission and a really thorough investigation. The idea that you can just sort of say, do you want this or that, doesn't really, to me, seem to answer this complex web of questions that have arisen with respect to the cannabis referendum.
Richard Harmon with us, Linda Clark back with us in a sec. Richard, Harold Wilson, I think it was, first said a week is a long time in politics, and we all know now that this is completely right.
I think on Tuesday we saw that a day was a long time in politics. Yeah, this last week has been quite extraordinary. If you think about it, last Sunday morning, Todd Muller was the leader of the National Party. Nikki Kay was his deputy. Amy Adams was number three. And Judith Collins was sort of just one of the mob. All of that has changed.
All of that has changed. Is it a record of sorts that Nikki Kay became leader of the National Party technically in the morning and had decided to go by the afternoon?
Yeah, well, it's a record. It's probably not. It wasn't totally surprising. I think there had been, there was quite a strong wave of opinion within the party, which actually seems to have grown as the week's gone on, opposing the way or criticising the way that she had really seemed to be the de facto leader, while Todd Muller was the nominal leader.
Linda Clark's back with us. Linda, so now we'll get to know exactly how warm and liberal New Zealand really is. It has become more of a kind of left-right battle for the hearts and minds of Kiwis.
Well, I hope not. This is a real bind for this election, and I think it's a difficulty for Labor as they campaign. But Willie Jackson put out quite an interesting post on Facebook yesterday, and where he said, look, you know, he likes Judith, and I don't doubt that he does, actually, because the last goodness knows how long Willie Jackson and Judith Collins have appeared on a breakfast show together every week, and they do have a great rapport with each other. And Judith is charming, right? She's a politician a bit like Winston Peters, up close, charming, funny, pretty gossipy. She can be, she's a hoot, actually, much more than you would expect up close, very much like Winston Peters, which is one of the reasons the gallery always has been fascinated with Judith Collins in the way that the gallery is always fascinated with Winston, because they're just quite complicated, mercurial, attractive characters up close. But what Willie Jackson said was, look, I really like her. There's no doubt she's highly, highly skilled as a politician. She was a very successful minister. She was, and I think, and has been one of the most, if not the most effective opposition spokesperson for National. But she is divisive, and you just can't get around that. And what he was saying was, it's not a time for divisiveness, because we actually still need to hang together. I think that's right, and I think that voters will have... I'm going to be interested to see how voters respond to this, because wherever I go, and, you know, yesterday, good example, go to the butcher, go to buy the weekly meat, and the butcher's asking me, you know, what do you think, really? You know, are we going to go into lockdown? You know, are we able to keep to make sure that people don't escape? What are we doing? Because look at Australia. I mean, people are anxious about this, and for very good reason. So we're not out of the woods, right? And in the middle of that, we've got a campaign going on. And she came out of the blocks very strongly on whatever day it was this week, because it's all a blur. And the first thing she said was not, you know, I'm here for New Zealanders, not... certainly not an apology for the to the patients whose details were leaked or any of that stuff. What she came out was we're going to take the country, we're going to crush it, we're going to win, and that's her mindset.
She'll make a populism play, Richard.
Well, look, I think what we're going to see and what we are seeing, and look, I'm in Auckland at the moment at the New Zealand First Conference, and it's abundantly evident there that National and Labor have both moved to the centre. They are fighting for the centre vote. NZ First got squeezed out of the middle. Both parties have abandoned their hardline flanks, and they're leaving, in the case of Labor, they've opened up room on the left for the Greens, and in the case of National, they've opened up room on the right for ACT. I think, you know, you'll see a lot of, it's going to become inevitably a battle of personalities more than policy, I think, between Labor and National, because I think their policies are going to converge. Yes, Judith Collins is populist, but so is Jacinda Ardern.
Yes, okay, a battle for the centre, but do you sense that Judith Collins knows the only way she can win is with finding a clear delineation somehow? She's kind of throwing the dice in that respect.
Well, I think you saw the kind of areas where they will delineate with the infrastructure launch on Friday, which was actually had been planned, ironically enough, for Tuesday by Todd Muller. And you saw Labor respond on Sunday. I mean, National put up the four-lane highway from Whangarei to Tauranga. They put up heavy rail in Auckland rather than the light rail, and the completion of busways and motorways, and of course the second harbour crossing. Labor came back on Sunday with a cycleway. So I think you'll kind of see those differences, but at the core policies is, she's already said she's not going to cut social spending. But Labor, National, of course, is committed to no taxes. Labor's equivocal on that a bit at the moment. But I don't think you'll see a big fundamental policy difference between the two parties.
I'll try and get back to the $31 billion. Linda, New Zealand likes its leaders comfortable in their skins. Yes, and we now have two, well, if you count Winston, three of them. But we now have Jacinda and Judith both with that quality.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you mean when you say comfortable in their skin. I mean, that's right. But what New Zealanders like are leaders who have a North Star, you know where they're going. So less about them, more about where they're taking us. And Judith Collins definitely has a North Star. I think that in the early days it was hard to know what Jacinda's was, but I think that voters have got a sense, an extraordinarily strong sense of where her North Star is, born out of the various crises that she's led the country through in the previous 3 years. Winston's always had one. The Greens have struggled to a certain extent because neither of their co-leaders seem to have one in the same way that Jeanette Fitzsimons or Rod Donald did. So that's the thing. It's the North Star. It's where are you taking us? But Richard's point about the policy convergence and the fight for the centre, I mean, same as it ever was. That John Key took National to the centre, and the National Party straddled the centre confidently for 9 years, and that's why Labor was starved of oxygen, didn't know what to do with itself. So there's nothing new about that, and likewise, there's nothing new that this will be a campaign about personalities. But I think the difference about this campaign is that there is a lot at stake. I mean, politicians always say that, right? But this time, voters actually feel it in their bones, and that's the difference. And what's at stake this time, it's more complicated than, you know, do we have tax cuts or do house prices go up or do house prices go down? There's something big bubbling outside the border. And so there's a different feel to this election campaign that's going to be really interesting to see what voters do with that.
Richard, you seem to be saying on Politic, tell me if I'm wrong, that Judith Collins can't lose. Even if she doesn't win the election, she'll shore up the base. She may imperil New Zealand first. She'll survive as leader. Have I got that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I'm hearing from National MPs is that if she can get them to around 40, that will be a victory. They're not going to go public and say they don't expect to form the next government. But a good many of them are aware of the fact, put it that way, that they're unlikely to form the next government. So I think the other thing too, another very interesting comment I've heard from several of them in the last few days relates to Christopher Luxon. And they're saying, look, the Todd Muller experiment shows that actually experience in politics counts. Mileage counts, and being a political party leader is different to being a CEO of a business. So all of that points, certainly in the medium term, it would seem, to Judith Collins retaining the leadership.
Is 10 weeks enough to achieve a turnaround? 2 months, I think, almost exactly.
Well, you just look at history. I mean, look at what Jacinda Ardern did with Labor at the last election, which no one would have predicted, and not even her. And so, no, in theory, it's not. But I don't think it will work in this case. And I think the point about whether or not she's absolutely going to shore up National's base, and that's what she's there for. She's there to save jobs, or as one commentator said this week, to save the furniture. And she'll do that. But to do that, to get to 40%, National's going to have to be a lot more disciplined than they've been. And that is one of the things I think that's going to really befuddle her during this next period, because for whatever reason, there are a bunch of very ill-disciplined MPs in that caucus who feel that they, you know, feel some need to ring Tova O'Brien at News Hub, you know, every day on a regular basis to basically pour cold water on the rest of the team. And they were doing it yesterday. So, you know, TV3 had another story yesterday with people saying critical things about either Judith Collins or about the party or about the direction. Now, that's got to stop. And you saw Collins yesterday saying she's not going to have it. Well, it's all very well stamping your foot, but you've got to find out who the rat is, basically, before you do something about it. And that's always been very difficult for political parties to do. In fact, when you have that division working behind the scenes, very, very difficult.
Why are they doing this? Because they're beguiled by having a hotline to a reporter.
Well, I think
they're doing it. Yeah. Well, Richard, you say.
Well, I mean, let's assume that these calls come from what you might what the British tabloids always call friends of Simon Bridges, and there's a bit of voodoo going on here, I think. I think the rest of the caucus is aware of it, and it won't last, I don't think, because when it's so obvious, it ends itself in many ways.
Okay. Judith Collins announces the biggest infrastructure package in New Zealand's history, $31 billion to smash congestion spread over 10 years' worth of new infrastructure. She said it's so much fun to be announcing this. Whether you keep promises like this or not, Linda, the point is to go big.
Yes, I don't know. I thought both National and Labor's infrastructure policies have just been so dispiriting, which shows how long I've been out of the gallery, I suppose. I just don't find them exciting at all. I mean, this is a huge opportunity for both parties here. COVID has really shaken things up, and the public has given a license to this government for the time being, but whoever is the government after the election, to spend large. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, more than one lifetime, really. And it would be great to see some of that spending going on some really forward-looking clean energy ideas, some transformative ideas, to use Labor's language, although they're not transformative at the moment. And I thought, the fact that Judith Collins' first announcement was roads was dispiriting. Yes, that policy had been ready to go, which is why they pushed it out, because it looked like they hadn't lost a beat in momentum, and I understand all of that. And yes, it talks to their base, and that's what this is all about. So, it was a good idea. But for everybody else in the country, the swinging voters, those people who might have voted National once but aren't voting or supporting National at the moment, it just said same old, same old. And they have to provide something other than same old, same old.
Obvious wild card in the election, Sam Morgan pushing his COVID card idea, says as soon as Ashley Bloomfield says we have a case that is not connected to travel, you should prepare for a lockdown, head to the shop and refresh your stocks of toilet paper. Richard, what are the chances of that happening, do you think?
Well, I'm not a medical expert, but medical people I know are absolutely convinced that there will be a case of community transmission at some point. The Prime Minister made a rather interesting set of alternatives that could happen if there was another case, ranging from, one sort of street lockdown to regional lockdowns, etc. So I'd be surprised if we went to a national lockdown. The clue to all of this is going to be really, at the end of the day, the maintenance of the border. And this interesting idea coming, Cabinet on Monday is going to consider imposing a charge on people returning. National have come out in favour of one. So they're rescheduling flights. So they're trying to reduce the number of people coming through the border. That's going to help. The presence of the military in terms of providing management and logistics has had an obvious advantage. And it does seem as though they're really trying to manage the border. I think, Megan Woods does really seem to have this under control. Now, that may be enough. And it may be that if they get an isolated case of community transmission, they're able to, restrain the controls, etc., to a very small number of people in a very small area. Certainly that's what they're going to want if it happens before the election.
Okay. Linda, you're not a medical expert either, but do you agree with Richard? Managing the border is a really crucial thing.
Well, I think as soon as someone, like Richard says, Megan Woods has got it under control, you've jinxed it, likelihood. Because the thing is, this is about human nature, right? This is about somebody who doesn't like abiding by the rules escaping, and that would generally happen through a whole host of tiny little errors, and then that person being a super spreader. That's the risk. And I like Richard, the people that I talk to think it's extremely likely that we will have community transmission at some point or other. The timeline for that doesn't stop at election day. That's why this election is so unusual. You know, we're going to have a border that's closed in the way that it is now for a long period of time. So any time during that period, we could have, an outbreak if the border becomes porous. And when you hear, as you did this morning on your news program, universities wanting to do the pilot scheme for bringing in overseas students, so it's a great idea, right? We all want foreign students to come back to the country. But you do that, you increase the risk because you've got another whole group, another whole cohort that you're bringing in. And every time you move a little piece on the puzzle, you change the risk factors and the calculations. So I think this is right. We are just, it could happen. It probably will happen at some time or other. And for Labor, they've got their fingers crossed that it doesn't happen until after the election.
It is going to be a very interesting 2 months, isn't it? I want to ask you about the 3.5% rates increase for Auckland. Despite most, which has been construed as Aucklanders' back rates increase to support essential services, although I think most Aucklanders wanted a 2.5% or less, there'll still be severe staff shedding. Would you like, Richard, would you like the vision and the entertainment, because we discussed this last week actually on in a different context, the vision and the entertainment and the bells and the whistles aspects of council business to go first? Phil Goff's already said you'll notice slow roadworks, and I think Aucklanders are noticing that. What do you think should be the approach?
Well, I think the first thing is that councils have got to realise that we have yet to see the full economic implications of COVID. It's only when the wage subsidy comes off in September that we're going to see people in real hardship. We know that there are a hell of a lot of businesses that are just barely breathing at the moment. Not all the big layoffs that have been announced have actually occurred yet. So there's going to be a large number of people in cities, both the big cities, who are going to be in economic hardship. Now, I think at that point, councils are going to need to reconsider their rates increases because rates are a cost. And they're particularly burdensome for people on low incomes. And, of course, it's people on low incomes, like building workers and what have you, who are going to be in hardship. And I really think a dose of reality around the council tables would be quite a good idea.
Cameron Bagri, just finally with you, Linda, if you would like a quick word. Cameron Bagri was arguing, I think, at one point for a zero rates increase for Wellington, not 5%. What's your view on this?
Oh, I think the councils are between a rock and a hard place, because if we go back before COVID, certainly in my city, in Wellington, I mean, the list of things that the council needs to fix urgently in this city is as long as your arm. And that's from huge, theatres because of earthquake damage. It's our pipes because we can't deal with our own stormwater. I mean, there's just endless projects. The library, which has been closed for months now, and everybody wants rebuilt or reopened as soon as possible. So before COVID, there was an expectation that rates would have to increase because how do you pay for all of these projects? COVID has come in the way, and Richard's right. A rate increase will be most hurtful for a lot of people, particularly the group I would identify would be people on fixed incomes or the elderly who still are in their own homes.
Sure.
Given they're not making any money from the money they've got in the bank, if they've got any money in the bank. So COVID's got in the way, but all of those projects remain.
Yeah.
So in a city like Wellington, where we've got so many parts of the city that are no-go now because they haven't been earthquake strengthened and they're closed waiting for the council to do something about it, the alternative is there's no rate increase, and for however long, and we don't know how long, our city remains completely broken. So that's not tenable either, right?
Understood.
So this is a rock and a hard place.
All right, lovely. Great to talk to both of you again. Thanks, as always, for your company. Linda Clark, Richard Harman on Sunday morning.